Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I'm Warren Davis, and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Hello, Swerve Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. How the devil are you?
I'm good. I feel a bit worried that I was down on Raw when everyone else was high on Raw.
I'm not sure a lot of people were high on
Raw. Not high on Raw, but I feel like I was out of step with the general consensus.
I was going to say, the Discord chat seemed to be more into the show than you were. Mm.
And usually, rather than sort of listening and recognising that people might have different opinions on their own and going, oh, I disagree, they usually just like try and tear you down. So I'm kind of bracing myself.
Well, I think you're in a fortunate position because I find that our audience is predisposition to hate Raw anyway. So you saying bad things about Raw, they'll be like, yeah, no, Raw's awful.
I hope so.
And that so they you should
I hope
be
so
fine.
So they've got blind hate red brand.
I think they do, in the same way that they have blind love for SmackDown. So anytime you say something that's bad about SmackDown, they're just like, well, you guys hate everything. Mm. Which is usually when I do the reviews. So I think you'll be fine. I think most people will be on your side anyway because people just want to hate Raw because Roman's on top.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Let's hope that people just despise Roman.
Yeah.
And it takes the heat off me.
But how was your weekend?
It was good. I went to a family wedding.
Lovely.
In the Barbican, which is a lovely... It's one of my favourite buildings. So me and my lady partner, that's our dream place to move to because the Barbican's a sort of art centre, museum, cinema thing. But it is also this weird utilitarian community founded in the 70s by some brutalist architects where they've got these green spaces and everything's made out of concrete and it's, yeah.
Mm.
But you effectively have to wait till someone dies to move in, because it's a one in one out policy. And we found some flats the other day.
Mm.
One bed flats, not that big, £750,000.
Holy heckins.
Three quarters of a mil.
Oof. No thanks.
Yeah, so that's on the back burner. That's in the maybe list.
I mean, you've got all these smart blinds that you want to buy. You haven't got the extra money aside.
I want to get some smart blinds so they can start coming up when the sun rises.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. But yes, the best man speech was very funny. So the couple was my cousin Ross getting married to his, well, now wife Robin. And there were about 120 people there and perfectly split into family and architects, because they're both architects themselves, so they knew loads of other architects. And
lots of structure jokes.
Yeah.
I should have used it. Did he have a good structure to his speech? Damn it.
But the best men were, I went to school with them. And because I went to school with my cousin as well. And they had this running joke where it was, at the end of every paragraph, or couple of paragraphs, they go, and it's just really nice to see that Ross has finally found the Robin to his Superman,
which is obviously incorrect.
Yes, and they kept, and no one laughed, but I would go. So out of this, sorry about that cackle, But
sorry, they hear it from me all the time.
Yeah, from this big hall, there was literally only me laughing. And then a few more paragraphs, and they'd go, and it's just so nice to see that Ross finally found the Wolverine to his Robin. Again, huge laugh from me. Crickets. They came over afterwards and said, thank you so much for laughing at those jokes. I was like, did people just not get them? Because I like comic books.
Yep.
And I asked around. No, people got it. They just didn't find it funny.
Oh, man.
So he was intentionally bombing. I thought this was a masterstroke in a speech. But I guess people just want funny stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
Not stuff that's designed to make you annoyed.
No, exactly. You don't want to do things that are too personal. That is like a joke that you and two other people would get. You want to try and make it things as broad as possible. When I did my best man speech, the one and only best man speech I've ever done, I was very much in the mold of, I'm going to make bad jokes, but I'm going to recognize that they're bad jokes by playing the sound effect.
Oh, you had some
after each
some
time
cues.
I do the bad joke. So I would do it. I would have like some nice, some nice sentimental stuff. And then I'd be like, oh, hang on, it's about time I did a joke, because I read in a book once that you should do jokes in your speech. And I'm not very good at writing jokes, so I just got bad jokes. So I would do lots of bad jokes and then play the sound effect, and that would then get the groans and laughter from the people who were listening.
Good tactic.
It was good.
What was the best bad joke?
Well, my favourite one is, how do you organise a party in space? You plan it.
Nice.
That's good. It's good, isn't it? Bad jokes. That's another segment we could do on this show.
Well, that's all. That was Once Upon a Time, an Adam and Joe thing.
Yeah, but that was more like contrived, made up jokes. Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to send in some bad jokes, go for that.
Bloody
what did love what did people think about the Create a Wrestler segment?
Well, I mean, no one sent one. There's a couple of people on Discord who were just like, mine's far too embarrassing to send in.
That's the point.
Yeah.
I'll start off. Did I tell you what mine was? He was called the OJ Master. Because my name is Oliver James Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish people would call me
OJ. Nice.
I thought that was
like
a cool
Simpson
name. I didn't really know what that was. Mm-hmm. I'd heard it in the news, and I like The Simpsons. So I just assumed it was a cool thing. Not someone who was accused.
Yes.
Of murdering his wife. But yeah, so, and his gimmick was wearing a bright orange t-shirt and bright luminous green trousers and bright orange shoes and luminous green sunglasses all the way through the match. Mm-hmm. With big spiky hair, and he would come out, the big party guy gimmick, does the worm a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, well, mine, I think I've told the story on the podcast, or at least on the Wrestle Ramble before, that my creator wrestler I used to do on No Mercy was Fox Rider.
Fox Rider.
Yeah, named after Fox Mulder from The X-Files.
Sure.
And Rider, just because he had sort of a bit of... I was obsessed with The Undertaker's bike rider gimmick, so I sort of did that. But it was spelled the same way as Zack Ryder, as he would then later debut in the WWE and stole my gimmick. But yeah, he was
Raven. Was he Raven?
I mean, no, my wrestlers in like WWF Attitude and things like that, they would certainly look like Raven. But this one more looked like The Undertaker, like the Undertaker crossed with the Hardy Boys.
Wow,
I would say, yeah. You know, like Jeff had that sort of mesh top thing. Mm. Like I'd have the mesh top, but I would have like the Undertaker style jeans and boots and a bandana and long hair.
So badass taker.
Yes, yeah. American badass taker. Yeah,
not Dead Man Hardy taker.
No. Also, no. This is more Dead Man Walking Undertaker than like Undertaker. Right. Before we crack on with the show, would you like a wrestling confession?
Ooh, yes.
Which is obviously a gimmick that we've stolen from another podcast. It would seem.
Which podcast did we steal this from?
I can't remember. They did tell. Like someone did tell us. It was the person who initially sent us their wrestling confession, then said, oh, we could do this as a segment. Then they emailed back to let me know that, yeah, no, that's a segment that I stole from another podcast. You probably shouldn't steal it either. But we have done anyway.
Yeah. There are only so many segments.
Exactly.
There's going to be an overlap.
And no one sent in a creator wrestler, so we have to do it this way.
It's your fault, listeners.
Exactly, yeah. And this person has also sent in a Poetry Corner submission that we'll do in the outro portion. But this is from Emily, and she's emailed in before. Emily Gillalai, I believe it is, or Gillalai, maybe. It was the 90s and the peak of the Ultimate Warrior's reign as WWF champion, and a young child was being left at home for the first time ever. So what does... Oh, it's a he. I do apologise. So what does he, at the time, do?
So is it a mill?
Oh, no. Yes, it could be a mill, but it's definitely E-M-I-L-Y.
Okay.
So I do apologise. That's my mistake. He drags his mattress into the living room, paints his face with finger paint as what is available, and climbs to the top of the... to the couch to drop an elbow on his teddy bear. Well, that was the finish of the match, at least. And yes, that child was me. And at the time, the clues were too cryptic then and meant to inform me that I happened to be a trans woman. There we go.
Right.
So that's where my mistake comes in. I do very much apologise. And no, that's not a confession, as there's nothing to be ashamed in that. Absolutely there is not. It does help to explain the poem that we'll do later. I cancelled my WWE subscription after the horrid scene with Bobby Lashley's sisters. Even writing Luke an email explaining my decision where I chastised relatively miserable detail of this forgettable skit. Bobby lifting one of the girls' skirts. Maybe it was genuinely just meant to be about fashion, but it was more and more transphobic laws are being passed in the US. It felt like him lifting a skirt to check if, well, you get the idea. My wife tried to calm me down by telling me there's supposed to be heat in wrestling, and for a moment I was worried I might have overreacted to cancel, but then I remembered WWE is quite frankly just bad, and I've been thinking of leaving for months. The incident just gave me the motivation I needed. This is a long meal, I don't care if you read it at all, but I do want to thank you for your bonus podcast of New Japan, TNA, and even WOS Wrestling. Would love to hear more, and I'm happy hearing from any combination of Luke, Ollie, and Laurie. And then they have sent us a poem as well.
Lovely.
Which we'll obviously read out in the outro portion for this. I've also got a very good Agony Arts confession for you.
So was the wrestling confession that they dressed up like Ultimate Warrior and did an elbow drop?
Yes.
It needs to be more embarrassing than that.
Oh, no, I've just...
There needs to be a horrible injury attached to it.
I need to undo that. I've just filed it away and I didn't mean to do that. Sorry, I've got it now. I found it again.
Yeah, I think let's not forget that what WWE... the stuff WWE does that could be construed as offensive, it's probably just them being rubbish.
Yes,
a lot of the time.
Yeah, they just... ignorance. Probably just not realizing what they're doing, I'd imagine, is very much the way to describe WWE. And also, finally, before we move on to the main show, someone did tweet us in to ask if we could not give spoilers away for the Spider-Man game. So if you are thinking of talking about that, then...
I didn't do that, did I?
No, we were very vague with what we were talking about, but they were just concerned that because we're both playing it now, I've played upwards of 25 minutes now in the 2 weeks that I've had it.
I am itching to start, but I got 40 minutes in yesterday.
Oh, 40 minutes, man.
That
How
is
you get...
not enough. I need 3 hours minimum.
No, well, I mean, I'm...
Especially when Batman turned up. That was good. Oh, no!
No, spoilers!
Oh, quick, go to the show!
Right, so we are going to be talking about Brock Lesnar's WWE return and his next match in Saudi Arabia at Crown Jewel.
Where? Brock Lesnar wasn't there. Why would he? That would cost way too much money. But Paul Heyman was to accept on Lesnar's behalf a triple threat for the Universal title at November 2nd's Crown Jewels.
Nope, no plural. Crown Jewel is the name of this show, I believe.
WWE Crown Jewels. Coming to you live from Riyadh,
Saudi Arabia. We're heading back to the beautiful city. I'm assuming it's a beautiful city of Riyadh.
Because Jeddah was the last one.
That was a really beautiful city.
And progressive That was my big takeaway.
Did you hear how progressive the place has become? That they've just arrested a man for having breakfast with a woman in public?
What?
I know.
What kind of breakfast?
Well, I'd imagine croissants, pain au chocolat, maybe. And I'm only saying that because that's what I had for breakfast this morning.
Well, you know, we shouldn't probably make light of such serious
things. No, we shouldn't. And we also shouldn't make too many political comments, because the last time we did that during the build-up to the Greatest Royal Rumble, we got accused of being unfair to Saudi Arabia.
Locking people up for having breakfast.
Yeah.
I love breakfast.
Breakfast is my favourite meal of the day.
Yeah. But hey, you know, if you really want to be diligent on fasting, micro-fasting, and you want to only eat within that 6-hour window, breakfast is the best meal to skip because of natural appetite suppression in the morning. So maybe, like, the Crown Prince has just got everyone's fasting schedules.
You know,
in
when
mind.
When people clicked on this video expecting us to talk about Brock Lesnar, this is what they wanted to hear, was you and I chatting about breakfast, because I made an absolutely corking breakfast over the weekend. But I'll tell you about that another time.
Yeah, on the podcast, probably.
Yep.
So, yes, Brock Lesnar is going to be there at the Crown Jewels show.
I was just trying to mind my notes. Yes.
And it's going to be a triple threat with Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns' Universal title up for grabs. So this is playing off the Hell in a Cell finish where Brock Lesnar came, ripped open the Hell in a Cell
kicked
door.
Kicked it off, you mean?
Kicked it open.
Kicked it through.
And F5'd both men, which was so devastating, the entire match had to be called off. And it's built to this, yeah.
Yes, we're heading back to Saudi Arabia. We're getting a triple threat match. But not only that, the show is also going to contain a World Cup tournament, the first ever WWE World Cup tournament where the winner will get a trophy. That much we know, because there's a trophy in the promo image.
But they love a trophy, don't
well,
they?
I know. I made a joke about this in the news, that this is just the next in a long line of trophies that have been handed out this year alone. And I'm sure that we'll never see that trophy ever again, much like Braun's Greatest Royal Rumble Championship belt.
You'll see it for a couple of weeks, but then it will be quite... It'll just Thanos away.
Yeah, it'll be moved into storage.
Yeah, imagine carrying that around from flight to flight, show to show, a cross-country America thing.
But I think this is... It's really interesting that Lesnar's back, because we all expected him to be gone after SummerSlam. That was what had been widely reported, was that was going to be his final date. He'd entered himself into the USADA testing pool, because he's going back to UFC in January next year. But the report is, Dave Meltzer was running about this in MMA Fighting, that he hasn't actually officially signed with UFC yet, and there's no sort of date really confirmed for when he's going back. He's just re-entered the USADA testing pool, and he's going to make upwards of seven figures for these two matches.
The
way that Meltzer phrases it, for the Saudi Arabia matches, so presumably the Greatest Royal Rumble and this one,
right,
is where he's earned 7 million. Well, up seven figures is where he will have earned that money from. And Meltzer also writes that while WWE, because they signed a confidentiality agreement, that they weren't allowed to reveal how much money Saudi Arabia has paid for them to go over and create propaganda pay-per-views, the financial reportings, so a little smirk from you there, the financial reportings state that Greatest Royal Rumble earned them an extra $45 million for that one show. So that's...
Just one show. They'll get two $45 million...
Presumably, if this one is as big.
Hey, man, there's an old Groucho Marx quote that I live by. Here's my principles. If you don't like them, I've got others. And that's a fair chunk of change.
Well, that's more money than they've made from any other show, including WrestleMania. So that's why they're willing to... That's why they want to have stars on this. They want to earn the money that they're making, or they're being paid for this, by having a big name like a Brock Lesnar. That's why they're trying to coax Shawn Michaels out of retirement for the show, because that's the other rumoured match. It's D-Generation X versus the Brothers of Destruction.
Which, on this show, certainly seems to be built towards.
Yep.
That was the rumor last week, and you know, it's interesting how all this stuff that Dave Meltzer has reported is coming to pass.
Well, Dave Meltzer reporting things that are actually correct. Yeah, I mean, he's never done that before, has he? And it's really interesting that essentially money talks. And while I'd imagine Lesnar probably was done after SummerSlam, they were like, hey, but if you come and do this one more match at Crown Jewel, I can't remember what the name of the show was.
Crown Jewels.
You can have another load of money. But according to Mike Johnson at PW Insider, it's not just going to be Crown Jewel. That Lesnar is going to be appearing at all the major events until at least the end of the year. So perhaps that will include a surprise appearance at Super Showdown. And there's also Survivor Series coming up in November. And actually, Michael Cole had a line in this show where he said, man, there's a lot going on in WWE at the moment. And I was like, no kidding. Like, there's four shows in 6 weeks. Four big shows. You've got Evolution, or Evolution, depending on which way you want to pronounce it, SmackDown 1000, Super Showdown, and the Saudi Arabia show. And then you've got Survivor Series at the end of that month.
Yeah, so those first four all within a 30-day period.
Yeah, they fall within 6 weeks of each other, really.
From the 6th of October through to the 2nd of November.
Yeah.
And it is... I mean, that was one of my criticisms of this episode of Raw. It feels like it's being ripped apart.
Stretched.
And it's not like it's a stacked quality show anyway. It's already spread pretty thin. So
and you can also...
when you have all these pay-per-views pulling it off in each... different focus part, it makes that thinness even more transparent.
And you can tell which ones they care about, because Evolution is the one that is getting absolutely zero mention now. Like, they did their couple of weeks of it, but now they're more interested in pushing Super Showdown and Crown Jewel.
To be fair, Super Showdown is soon. The next one.
Yeah.
And Crown Jewels is the one that is plays off of the Hell in a Cell finish. So that could just be a weak thing.
But there was no mention of, they're doing the teasers of Ronda and Nikki, I suppose, but there's been no mentions of Mickie James and Alita. I mean, they mention it on commentary, but it's not like they've been doing video packages for it.
5 weeks until that show.
It's a three-hour show!
I've got no qualms. Look, it already feels like they're promoting too much stuff. I'm not going to sit there and go, yeah, but they're not promoting this other thing.
I wasn't saying that as a criticism. I was just saying you can see which shows are more important to them.
No, I think this week, there's many things I can see why
they would
only... In
all fairness, they are going to make much more money.
Yeah, plus, like, just narratively, one sooner and the other one sequentially plays off the previous night's
pay-per-view. Fair enough.
So I think that's okay. Paul Heyman actually came out here. The segment, the show kicked off with Roman Reigns saying, you know, if you want your rematch, Brock, come face me like a man.
Yes.
And I wrote in my Raw review, well, I can't think of many things more manly than kicking a cage door in, beating everyone up, and having a beard?
Yep, pretty much.
So that's like, yeah. But Braun Strowman came out and answered him instead, and they had a bit of back and forth. And then Baron Corbin comes out, and that's when he says the crown jewels. And I was a bit confused here. I was like, so what? What's that? It's a triple threat?
I thought it was quite clear that it's a triple threat match, and it's going to be at Crown Jewel, no plural, on the 2nd of November in Saudi Arabia.
Okay. And then maybe it was just the Crown Jewels bit that hit me by surprise.
You keep saying Crown Jewels.
I know, I'm trying to make it a thing.
Like my man.
Well, it's Crown Jewels is sort of an English slang for a...
Balls.
A penis and balls.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole package down there.
Yeah, that's the Crown Jewels.
I think it's funny.
Cool.
My man. And Baron Corbin made that match, and Braun said, that sucks.
He said, that sucks. Cheered. You suck. But then, crucially, he said, and everyone in this arena sucks, just to remind us that he is the heel.
Did you get the sense that Braun might be going towards that as a new catchphrase?
Well,
he said things suck a lot.
Yeah, but like, if that is going to be his new catchphrase, that'll get over and get him cheered like a babyface when he's clearly supposed to be a heel.
Yeah, it's already over. Because when he said it, later on to Baron Corbin, he says, you suck, cheer from the crowd, and I can kill you. He's just like, you know, by the way, I could kill you.
I could, with my bare hands, like, I could probably kill you.
It wouldn't make me break that much of a sweat. Just so you know, Baron.
Yeah.
And that got a bigger pop. So it's like,
because he's a natural baby face and he's presented like a badass.
Yeah, organically right now he is very much a baby face. It's awkward and contrived that they're trying to retrofit him into this mold to play off Roman. But then Paul Heyman came out and accepted the match on Lesnar's behalf, and he explained something called Brockonomics.
Yeah, I was really interested to learn about Brockonomics. Yeah. Apparently it's got a lot to do with UFC.
Yeah, so you can negotiate higher rates in UFC because of what you're doing in WWE, and he's getting paid loads for WWE. Playing off real life, really, if you said he hasn't even signed a contract with the UFC.
Apparently so. I thought actually it was really good as well. He was like that there's no bigger star than Brock Lesnar. When Brock Lesnar was champion, WWE got a multi-billion dollar deal with Fox. Their stock was at the highest it's ever been. That's while Brock was champion.
Yeah.
And that's why Brock should be champion again.
I like this. I'm surprised at how... You know, because I was always a fan of Paul and Brock, even when they had the Universal Reign of Terror. But it was after WrestleMania where I was like, oh, okay. And that's not Brock's fault. That's WWE's for elongating that feud past Greatest Royal Rumble all the way to SummerSlam. I was like, okay, I'm a bit sick of this act now. 1 month is all it took. Just seeing Paul out there, I'm like, this is much better than what it could be.
Yes.
Because I found it quite uninspiring.
Mm-hmm.
You said you liked it.
I thought it was a good show. I'm going to say it was a groundbreaking show or like an excellent show, but I thought it was a good show. I thought it was more good than bad on the show.
So you know when, like, before Roman won the title, and we said, look, this is all like a weird hangover of when Roman was meant to win the title at WrestleMania. We just want the Roman era to begin. We don't want the Roman era, but we just want to get past it, and we see what happens now. We're bored of whatever was before, which was the Lesnar reign. And this was the first show where I was like, okay, we really are in this Reigns era.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that ground me down a bit.
Well, it's because I saw a lot of people talking about this on the Discord, saying that
Come chit chat with us, by the way.
And some people saying that, like, yeah, they didn't really like the main event because it was just a lot of people running in. It's a lot of schmars. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors. A lot of smoke and mirrors at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. And I was like, I mean, yeah, but that's how Raw used to end when Austin was on top as well. There was always a lot of run-ins and interference and schmozzes around ringside and everything. But we seemed to like it then. But it's probably because we liked Austin.
Well, that's it. There's a crucial difference there. That's one of the most over guys ever to step foot in a ring. And Roman Reigns, one of the most divisive.
Well, I mean, look at, like, okay, absolutely, yeah. I mean, look at when, you know, Mankind first won the WWF Championship in 99. There's about a million people at ringside because you've got all the DX and the Corporation and The Rock and everyone. Like, there's so many people around ringside and so much run-ins and interference in that match. But it's genuinely one of the best matches they've ever done on Raw.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it works. Yeah. But you do have to be emotionally connected to the people in what roles they're in.
Yeah.
We're into Mankind as a face. We were into DX as tweener, cool.
Well, they were the cool guys. They were the baby face. I mean, I like everyone in this with the exception of Roman, really. Mm. And even then, I don't hate Roman.
But like,
just a bit blur.
The problem is with having Roman as the central point is that everyone else has to move around to fit into that.
You called him a black hole, I believe.
Yeah, like he's sucking everyone else in. Like, I love Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. I love them how they're being presented at the moment. But it is a bit disheartening to step back and go, oh, but you're just Roman's lackeys.
You're Roman's mates. Yeah.
When really they should be bigger things in their own right. I know that sounds silly because Seth's the Intercontinental Champion. But yeah, I don't feel like it's really been positioned that way. But yeah, Paul Heyman does the Brockonomics thing. And he also brings out the door. I thought they were going to make more of that.
I thought they were as well. They just brought it out and then sort of put it down and then left.
Yeah, the Hell in a Cell door that Brock had kicked in. They just popped it there on the wall.
And against a red LED screen, so you couldn't really see how red the door was.
Maybe Heyman didn't, like, camouflage down of his his eyes.
But I thought this was a decent opening segment. I can't say that I'm thrilled for Crown Jewel because it'll end up, I think it'll just be like Greatest Royal Rumble, which will be a glorified house show. Mm-hmm. Nothing really major will happen. Stuff will happen at the show, but it's a house show. It's there because WWE are getting paid a lot of money for it.
And there's the even... It feels even stinkier this time because just 5 days before will be Evolution, the all-women's pay-per-view, and then, like, you thought, hey, that's good. Like, WWE are doing that thing, as gimmicky as it is. You know, fair play. But now you're like, oh, but are they just doing it because they're going to have the all-men's pay-per-view on 5 days after? So, yeah. I don't know. This segment ended with Corbin booking him versus Reigns for the main event for the Universal title.
A match that I was like, oh, I have zero interest in that match, mate.
I was like, well, that's the biggest drop ever from 2 to 3 at the second to third hour of
War. Absolutely, yeah. But I suppose, like, going back to the title of this video, what are your thoughts on Brock and Crown Jewel?
Well, I'm glad to see Brock back. I'm excited to see that he'll be featured going forward, because he is like a huge star, and the air does change when he enters the arena.
It's like we said with Walter in ring camp tank matches.
He feels
special. Yeah, the atmosphere does change whenever Walter steps in the ring.
Yeah, but it's the whole Crown Jewels thing. It's almost becoming white noise to criticize it because it's just all a bit redundant and cynical.
Mm.
But it's happening. It's like this weird non-canon. Well, it's like a one-shot. It's like, okay, so it's like when Marvel or DC, you'll be in the middle of a huge epic storyline that spans all the major titles in the comics, and then, oh, here's the summer holiday annual issue. Mm-hmm. It's an annual. That's what it is. It doesn't really impact anything else, but there's a few cool stories in there. But overall, it feels a bit pointless and a waste of $4.99.
Yep.
Yeah.
But they're making a lot of money from those annuals, so I guess thumbs up for them. Dig, dig, diggity, dig, diggity dog. Breaking. Dig, dig, diggity, dig, diggity dog.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Raw opened with that Crown Jewels, Roman Reigns, Braun, whatever segment. But the first match after that was Drew McIntyre versus Dean Ambrose. A match we both talked about really wanting to see after the Hell in a Cell stuff, the way that tag match was structured, and the run-ins for the Hell in a Cell main event. You really wanted to see Ambrose and McIntyre go at it in a singles feud, and that would feel like a big deal, and hopefully one that they would save for a proper program to pay off at a pay-per-view. But that's not what happened.
You talk silly. You talk silly nonsense, you, mate.
They just gave it to us right here.
But, you've said this many times. I thought they did enough in this match to make me want to see more matches out of them. I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was really good.
I agree. This wasn't the big match, but I just wish that this match could have been built up to over a few weeks. Yeah, this is like your first pay-per-view match.
Yes.
And then a couple of months after you have the big match. It was a good match. I just, in the grand scheme of things, I felt like money was left in the table. Although I do like, just before the ad break that would come back into the match, they just had a shot of Dean Ambrose glaring into the camera. It came out of nowhere, but it took me by surprise. I was like, is everyone else seeing this?
I thought the man of the match for me in this was Drew. I thought Drew was absolutely awesome in this. His selling of his knee and his leg was absolutely brilliant. It was really good because that's what Dean was targeting throughout the match. The commentators were putting that over. I was like, what a smart tactic, because he's the larger man. You take him off his base. I thought it was really good. And Drew got the big win with the big kick.
Yeah, so Dean was kind of protected as well. He gets up to the top rope. He's...
He stands on the LED post and then dives off to do like an axe handle or something, but Drew moves out the way. Dean just gets in at 9, but then runs into a Claymore kick.
Yeah, so that I felt like this was more Dean Ambrose losing it for himself rather than Drew 100% convincingly winning. So that that's probably why it felt like there's more, that this isn't the big payoff match. But I just wish it wasn't now. Then it cuts back to Corbin, and he makes Dolph versus Seth for the Intercontinental title. And if Seth doesn't turn up, he'll be stripped of the belt.
Well, that's because so Corbin walks up and says to Dolph, like, because Dolph's congratulating Drew, and Corbin says, "Hey, we're all going to beat up the Shield tonight. You've beaten Dean Ambrose. I'm going to win the Universal Championship from Roman Reigns. And Dolph, why don't you invoke your rematch clause for the Intercontinental Championship?" And Dolph rightly said, was like, "Well, I took a massive table bump last night. I'm all beaten up." But Corbin said, "Well, Seth's not here. And I don't think he's going to be here. So, I mean, if you invoke your rematch clause, he's not going to be here to wrestle, and you'll win by forfeit." Which I thought was really good. It was like heels being heels and trying to win the cheapest way possible. I liked this.
Yeah. I wasn't so... it's such a frank...
Such a negative ninny, aren't you, today?
I know. Maybe I'm just in a bad mood this week. But, the whole Corbin... Sometimes I like heels versus, like, heels being heels together. But this... It's already a bit Franken-team for me. And this... Baron like all that. Why does he like all the heels? I don't know. It feels lazy writing to me. But Corbin afterwards, I did like. He turns round after booking that match and tells a production person, "I am great at my job."
He's really proud of himself in that job.
Then we got Ronda Rousey backstage with Natalya and the Bella Twins all hanging out like friends. And Ronda, being the noob, just says, "Hey, like, I want to make an open challenge. How do I do that, girls?"
I don't know. And it almost speaks to Alexa calling her an overhyped rookie. It's not hard to go out there and just open. But I thought the worst thing about this was entirely going like, well, the way the guys do it is you just go out there as if, like, women have not been allowed to do that previously. They probably have. It's just the writers have never thought to do that.
Yeah, I thought this was rubbish.
This was a bad segment. Yeah. Very, very bad segment. The Bellas are still here. They'll be out later on. I thought this was very bad. And it was essentially, like, the Bellas and Natalya sitting there talking about how great Ronda is. They were just sitting there going, like, "God, she's great. How great is she?" "Very great." "Yeah, she's very great."
It's really poor writing of anything.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'm like, okay, this isn't Breaking Bad. I'm not going to compare it to Breaking Bad. But I'll compare it to...
WWE is not Breaking Bad.
Shocker. But I will compare it to, like, a basic network show, like an Arrow. I'm going to offend people by calling their favourite shows basic now.
It is very basic, that show, like, though. Supergirl.
You know, Walking Dead has become that. Just things that are just mainstream.
They're there to fill 40 minutes.
Yeah, like kind of villain of the week stuff. Stuff I would watch on Channel 4. Stargate, you know.
Yep, that was one of your favourite shows, Stargate.
Yeah, I like the mainstream stuff. I love mainstream things. And, but this, like, at least they're good. And you can sit down and kind of get sucked into it because the characters know who each other are. The scenes are often engaging. And there aren't huge logic holes, most often, Walking Dead, that you can drive trucks through. But here, this is just like, why would anybody watch that?
And the weirdest thing is, the majority of the writers they have write for TV. That's where they came from. They're all TV writers.
Maybe they're just the worst ones. And they're filtered through Stephanie and Vince.
Because WWE made this big deal of, like, they didn't want to hire people who liked wrestling. They wanted to hire TV people or people who'd worked within the Hollywood system to come in and so they could write a TV show. Because wrestling fans don't know how to write a TV show, I guess.
They did pretty well before this new mentality came in.
Who was it who was one of them? Because I know, like, David Arquette had a stint, but there was another one. Freddie Prinze Jr., that's the one. I was going to say Luke Perry, but I was like, it was like Luke Perry, but the other one. Freddie Prinze Jr., that's who I was
thinking. But he liked wrestling.
I know, but that's why he only lasted a couple of weeks.
Next up, we got Chad Gable taking on Victor. It is impossible not to be happy when Bobby Roode comes out for the glorious thing, and I'm like, Bobby Roode's been booked into oblivion. But then Chad Gable pops up from underneath the camera somehow.
He's so happy, just like celebrating around. My first note is, I love this partnership.
That grin is just so pure. There is no malice behind those eyes. It's just joy, unbridled joy emanating from Gable.
I was so thrilled. And it's Chad Gable in a singles match. I was like, I am thrilled by this. Who are they facing? It's the Ascension again. Yeah. And I thought to myself, well, Ollie Davis is going to be very upset that they're still facing the Ascension. And then by the end of this, it looks like they're in a feud now and it must continue.
Yeah, so after beating the Ascension in consecutive weeks, so twice, Chad Gable just took on Victor in a singles match. And Victor's an excellent wrestler.
He is. He's really good in this match.
It's a real shame that he's kind of stuck in this act that has become a jobber act. But yeah, just the crowd was dead here. They popped for the glorious entrance music and the finish, but they were so dead for this. And why would they be excited? It's like we've seen... But now is definitely the time. It's after a pay-per-view. It's kind of like a soft reset of all the feuds. Give Gable and Rude another tag team to face off against.
Absolutely.
And then make them face off against a different tag team next week.
And you could set it up quite easily. Kurt Hawkins comes out with a tag team partner that's just another jobber, and he's like, this is how I'm going to break my defeated streak. I'm going to face off against a tag team and get a tag team victory instead. And then Gable and Rude still win.
Slater and Rhino.
Do it that way, absolutely.
They're sitting right there.
There's plenty of options. But no, they're actually now getting into a feud with, because the Ascension have lost three times, and that's how the feud has started,
so
I guess.
What is... You can't call this a feud.
Well, you can, because
it's just a series of matches.
In the same way that Titus O'Neil and Authors of Pain had that feud that one time.
But they kind of worked it into some personal beef.
Did they?
There was a bit, yeah, like something about disrespect.
Or Mojo and No Way Jose. Where's No Way Jose been, BTW? So, he hasn't been around for ages.
So Mojo was a get, like he took specific umbrage with No Way Jose's,
but he just kept
attitude.
Beating him week in, week yeah. out.
But at least there was some motivation there. Like, these are just two acts that have been booked together repeatedly.
But now there's motivation.
Because, where?
Because Connor attacked them after the match, and he's now all annoyed because they keep losing, I guess. So there is motivation there for a feud.
We're getting that big Connor singles push.
That's
now.
That's what we've been waiting for. Yeah. When really, it's Victor's the one you want, because he's really good.
Seth Rollins arrives next backstage, slight limp, pimp limp.
Yep, which is buggered up Dolph's plans.
Mm, yeah, and he's told that Dolph is invoking the rematch clause, and he goes, I'll try and fight through.
Yep.
Like, you both took the exact same bump.
Well, I like it, because like, Rollins chuckles at being like, oh, yeah, of course he is. And then but makes the point, like, I need to remind Corbin that he may be the acting general manager or whatever his title is, but this is Monday Night Rollins. I liked Seth here.
Then we got The Undertaker.
Dong.
Dong.
Yeah. Mm. This was it felt like he'd lost himself, but at no point forgot his lines.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. How many times do you have to point out Shawn Michaels is Triple H's best friend?
Yeah.
Four.
Yeah, it was really... It was a bit rambly. It was more coherent than his one at Raw 25, because this
All-time
one
classic.
Because this one had a point. But it was not the world's greatest promo. And I will say this about the feud between Triple H and The Undertaker. It's just been promo after promo after promo. And there's been no interaction between the two of them. Like, why is Undertaker here one week, but then not here the following week, and that just happens to be the week Triple H is there? Like, just them in the ring together. Do a silent stare down. Anything. Well, like, it's just lads talking and saying, I'm gonna win.
Well, you're still 3 weeks out. Like, I have no problem with I think this has been an excellent build to a match. It's just, it does get me down that they don't do this for, like, mid-card feuds and just feuds.
I agree with you. I think they should do this... do a better version of storytelling for other feuds, because they are building this better than most stuff.
Everything.
I mean, I'd argue that AJ Joe's doing pretty well, and Becky and Charlotte, sort of. It's a bit muddled.
You see, there's an asterisk.
There's an asterisk there. But what I would say is, I think it has started very hot, but it's gradually worsening for me personally, because it is just Triple H comes out and says the Undertaker is old, and then the Undertaker comes out and says Triple H is delusional. And then Shawn Michaels will come out and say, The Undertaker is old. And then then Triple H will come out and say, The Undertaker is old. And then the following week, Undertaker's come out and said, Triple H is delusional. It's a lot of repeating the same points.
I think an extra wrinkle has been added each week. So the first one was Triple H, so that's your start. The next week it was the Shawn Michaels thing and Taker returned, and that was the best moment so far.
Best moment so far.
And then you had the Triple H promo where, like, I like the sentiment of that and how he built around the polls saying that he wasn't going to win, and that really irked Undertaker. Mm-hmm. That was a great line. And then this week, the Undertaker eventually revealed, after, you know, taking the scenic route around Death Valley, that Kane will be in his corner at Super Showdown. Shawn Michaels will be in Triple H's. Not the special guest referee, like was rumoured, but this definitely seems to be setting up the DX versus Brothers of Destruction tag match for the crown jewels.
Yes. I thought it was a bit of a rambly promo, but yeah, he got there in the end. This was a better promo than Raw 25.
Oh, yeah.
And it was better than his one with the Big Show back in 99, where he was talking about getting the motorcycles
back
and driving.
Back in 99.
Well, that's like the peak rambly Undertaker promo. That is, like, you go back and watch it, it's a marvellous, rambly, nonsense promo about nothing, and it goes on for about 20 minutes. At least this was concise.
So I like the way you've ranked this. It's better than the two other promos in his 30-year career.
You see, it was not the worst promo he's ever done.
It's the anti-penultimate worst promo he's ever done. I agree, I thought it was a rambly promo, but like a nice twist at the end with having Kane in his corner.
Kane got a massive pop.
Yeah.
Kane got a giant... It's the biggest reaction he's got that's not connected to Daniel Bryan in years.
Oh, he got a big pop last year when he returned at the cage match.
Yes, so that's a one-time thing, and then that diminished very quickly. Maybe it's because he hasn't...
This was a one-time thing.
Yeah, but he was here like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
With Team Hell. Team Hell knows the other feud we couldn't remember. You know, we're talking about things that Daniel Bryan has done since coming back.
Yes!
We completely forgot about Team Hell,
okay,
no. I knew there was something in the middle.
And I enjoyed that one. just so grumpy and cynical. Dana Brooke has left Titus Worldwide.
Yes. Yeah, and she came out. Bayley and Sasha Banks came out with the Connor's Cure kids, and they all did a little bit of celebrating. And it was lovely until Michael Cole shouted, "Hugs for everyone."
Yeah.
Which just made me cringe a little.
Yeah, and like, again, where's the angle, guys? Where is Dana Brooke coming out and just pushing one of them over to build to that feud?
Exactly. Corey had a weird line. Or not a weird line, but you know that sort of like, you just say things because you're the heel. Mm. Like, he was talking about how, like, he was putting over Titus Worldwide saying, like, Dana Brooke's had all of her success because of Titus Worldwide. And I'm like, what success?
Yeah, she lost.
She loses all the time.
And didn't have a match for a year.
Yeah. I mean, my only note here is Bayley wins, so I don't really know much else about the match. This is where I thought the show was starting to dip a little bit.
This was a very short match. It was just a belly to Bayley. So, I mean, when they set this up as Dana Brooke is now split with Titus Worldwide, something they've been building for about 3 weeks now, I figured, okay, Titus Worldwide are going to come down here and try and recruit Dana back. But it seems no. That is the end of the storyline now. Dana has split. There's going to be no follow-up. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it was a way because the crowd was so amped from the Undertaker match, you wanted to just cool them down a little bit. That's pretty much
just
what it was.
Let's just give them a break from cheering so hard.
For Kane.
So after that, we got AOP.
Before that, we got the new trailer for WWE 2K19, which I'm sure will be a fun game if you pay all the microtransactions, so you're actually allowed to play it.
Aren't they getting away from that?
No, it's only in Belgium. Belgium have ruled... Well, and that's with NBA 2K19. They've ruled that loot boxes is effectively gambling, and they've got to remove it from the... And I think Finland are looking into it as well now.
That part of Europe is so progressive.
I know.
All the Scandinavians and the little bit of Belgium is nearby.
I do really like the Scandinavian countries, and they're really pretty as well, and I think they're full of really, really nice people.
And tall, beautiful people.
Yep. I mean, when I went to Sweden, I was stunned at how beautiful every single person there was.
When I went to Denmark, it was like... Where are Are they keeping the ugly people? Where are my people?
I was going to say, where are the people that look like me?
Why are they all 6 foot blonde, blue-eyed and riding bikes everywhere? You look so graceful. The way they ride bikes.
Oh, yeah.
Just like this.
It's like a swan in water, but without the leg bit.
Yeah, I'm huffing. I'm hunched over.
Yep.
AOP was the next match, beating Jobber, local enhancement talent, Gregory James and Barrett Brown.
It was a short match. They won with the Super Collider.
Yes.
Is this going anywhere?
Well, this doesn't have to for a bit.
Chad Gableland, Rude versus The Ascension is bad for you.
There's a difference between squash matches week after week for a monster act and two new guys getting stuck in the same meaningless tag feud.
Oh, these are doing the same thing.
But, squash matches are a different... They're kind of a different beast.
I get you, the squash matches go. But my question is this leading to something? Because they're not going to be in the tag title picture anytime soon, because the tag titles are over in the Shield feud with Braun and the Dogs of War and all that. So are they just going to just squash jobbers for the next few months until that's all resolved?
For a couple of weeks, yeah. This has a purpose, and it's to get over AOP after a completely botched call-up.
I don't disagree with you. Mm. My only counter to that would be, this is what they did when they called them up the first time round, and then eventually just stopped doing it, and then they got into a feud with Titus Worldwide.
Yeah, well, the hope is this would turn into something.
Yes, that's what
I'm... This is not comparable to the glorious Gables.
I feel like this is not going anywhere soon.
They're bullies. They beat up a poor producer who had the audacity to walk past them backstage.
Maybe they're building them up for Rude and Gable. They need a heel act to face. Mm. That's not the Ascension.
Then we got the Seth Rollins Dolph Ziggler match. But before that, Rollins, Corbin and Ziggler are having an evil heels meeting backstage. Ho ho ho. You can still beat him, Ziggler. He's more injured than you.
Yep.
I don't think that's true. They just showed the replay. It looked like the exact same bump.
Yeah, but Dolph's hard, isn't he? Mm. He's a heel.
And Rollins walks in on them.
Yes, yeah. And he says that... it's like Dolph saying, hey, man, there's still time for you to back out of this match. Because he doesn't want to have the match either, because he's all banged up. But Rollins says he came for a fight. And that's when they led to the match. Both men were still in their backs after that table spot from Hell in a Cell. And this was a decent match. I really like the spot where he hit the superplex into the Falcon Arrow, but couldn't actually do the Falcon Arrow because of his back. I thought that was really nice.
I really liked this match. Yeah. Just because after any pay-per-view, that those are meant to be your big violent matches, especially a Hell in a Cell one, I really appreciated both men basing the whole match really around selling those injuries. Yeah. Every move had one of them going, "Ooh, my back." Or there was a great bit where Ziggler was on the outside, Rollins motions, not even does a full ring run, rope run, to dive on the outside, but then he just stops, just shakes his leg out and gets out and walks round the ring to get him.
I thought I
really, really like this match. It's not like a 4-star match or anything, but it's a really solid telling of that story, and that's what's really missing from Raw. The bread and butter stuff is not good. But this was very good.
I really liked that spot as well when he was selling the back and going to do the dive. I just I hope that continues for the rest of this night.
Yes, yeah. For the people who were that spear, man. Oh, a day later.
Oof, still going.
So
actually, I was talking about the fact that Seth did a dive later on in the evening.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, the adrenaline. Rollins hit the curb stomp in the end for the win. Cut back to Roman, nodding, watching the telly. There's my boy.
It's my lackey. He won.
Then we got Hispanic Heritage Month.
Oh, this was not my feed.
Which I was okay with. Because they talked about wrestlers. This wasn't Jennifer Lopez or stuff that I don't care about on a wrestling show. It was Eddie Guerrero. It was Rey Mysterio. It was Andrade Cien Almas talking about his father, who I can't remember the name of, a famous luchador. Yes. So, good.
Yep.
I expect we'll get this every week. I don't fully understand the Americans' obsession with making their own history. But yes, this was a fine installment.
Okay.
Ronda Rousey's open challenge was next.
Yeah. So, she comes out, she's all smiles.
hated that.
Yeah, and this happened at the pay-per-view as well. Well, she's meant to be, like, selling the ribs because her ribs are meant to be hurting. And even her ribs are taped up. Like she reveals during her promo, my ribs are taped up. But she's not selling it whatsoever. Mm. Like, she's just walking out, like, the exact way she would do normally. And considering how good her selling was at Hell in a Cell, this was very disappointing. And she was seemingly very overwhelmed by the reaction that she got because she was very giggly.
I think that's what they told her to do. This is always the way with Ronda. After she wins a match, they send her out there. She cuts an in-ring promo where it's like, I'm so humble. Thank you so much to Alexa Bliss. She really proved herself. I didn't know she could go that far, but I beat her in the end. And I'm just so grateful to the fans for embracing me and for the women backstage for being so lovely. And half of the roster are my best friends in the whole world. And even the heels, I love them too. I'm just here to... And, like, I have no time for that. I cannot believe they do this because after that, this was all to set up her open challenge.
Right, man. You got the cheap pops first.
Which cheap pops?
The cheap pops was just like, I want to be the best champion. I want to be like Bret Hart. Mm. Steve Austin. Hey, Ric Flair. Woo. Like, you have to get the cheap pops out there so people can get on your side.
Yeah, so just why? You can cut all of that out because the end of this promo was her turning to the camera and saying, and then entering meme face mode and effectively saying, now someone come out so I can beat them up.
Yeah.
And that was really cool.
If anyone has the gumption to come out and face me, very much a Vince McMahon line.
So why not just come out and say that?
Yeah.
Like, look, why not just have badass Rousey all the time? This isn't a character to be humble and grateful. And she name-checks Steve Austin. Ugh. I really didn't like it. And then, it might get interesting. Natalia's music has answered the open challenge.
Yep, but Natalia does not come out. In fact, the Riot Squad drag out her limp carcass. And then Ruby cuts a decent promo and said, like, what we did to Natalia, that was your fault. But then had the really weird line of, like, we don't dislike you. We just don't like you either.
Yeah.
What? Like, this is that duck butt line from Connor the other week with the Ascension. Is it a backstage thing I don't understand? Did she fall over her words? Did she forget something? It was a really odd line. And Ruby accepted the challenge and Ronda sort of just essentially attacked them all on her own. And then Ruby speared her. Really good spear, actually. Then, of course, here come the Bellas. Bellas come down and they dispatch the Riot Squad. But this is, again, one of these things. So I've got two issues with this. And this is apart from Ronda's promo. One, and it's the same with the AJ Joe thing at Super Showdown, you've already announced the match, so, like, just do things organically. Have this angle, and they'll be like, and now they're going to have a six-man at Super Showdown. Lovely stuff. The second part of this, and it's the issue I had a couple of weeks ago, why could we possibly care about this? Because the Bellas beat them, with a 2-on-3 handicap. Brie Bella beat her... Was it Brie or Nikki? One of them beat one of them in a singles match, so there's no real drama there. And now Ronda beat all of them up on her own, more or less, and they all beat them up with the three of them team together. So what challenge are the Riot Squad to them?
Yes.
Like, there's zero drama to this.
Yeah. My feelings on the... excuse me. My feelings on the Bella Twins are out there. I love them. It's completely uninteresting, and yeah, all the Ronda and the Bellas versus the Riot Squad at Super Showdown. I just give me an excuse to like the Riot Squad because I Sarah Logan's very good. I think Liv Morgan's improved tremendously. Ruby Riott, I've always been a fan of. I think she's an excellent wrestler and a great promo.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just there's nothing. They've just been booked into nothing. They're like sanity.
Yeah.
So it's very...
They might be higher on the totem pole than Sanity at this point.
Most people are. So this was just rubbish stuff for Rousey, rubbish stuff for the women's division, and just that sort of wet fart thing at the end of it, where it's, oh, and here's the match.
Yeah, they're going
to... We awkwardly, retroactively ties into.
Yeah, it's like announcing the match and then booking the angles to set up the match. Mm. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of this segment.
However,
speaking of good things, though.
Yes, so, you know, I might have been a bit grouchy for this review, but this...
A bit grouchy.
...is an... But you'll get blamed for all of it.
Of course I will.
But this is unbridled success for me. I cannot believe that this has worked. I cannot believe how, like, you know, how down I've been on Lashley's character. And then he does the my man thing. And I was like, that kind, we just...
We got it over ourselves because it made us laugh.
For
when,
us.
When we
yeah,
made
yeah.
jokes about it, yeah.
Like, that became a private joke between me, Luke, and Laurie, which we then shared with you. So, like, we've got an affinity for Lashley anyway. And then Leo Rush comes in, and my God, this pairing works.
Yeah, it really does.
So the segment starts off with Elias, who I think got the loudest pop of the night.
Yeah, of course he did.
In both ways. So first off, he did some wicked guitar.
Yeah, really nice.
And people were going crazy for that. And then he did the walk with Elias. Everyone went crazy for that. And then he did the your sports team sucks thing, and everyone booed him for that. So he got both the biggest babyface and heel pops on the show.
Elias segments quickly become some of my favourite times on Raw because it's when I know I can get up and comfortably make a cup of tea and my breakfast and not miss anything.
Yeah, I bought
because
the kettle.
I can put my headphones on and I can just walk away from my screen and I can set the kettle up and I can make a cup of tea and just listen to what he says. And it's grand.
Yeah, and he's been interrupted every week recently. So just as he starts to do the song, someone comes out. And in this time, it was Leo Rush.
And Elias had... So Leo Rush starts cutting this promo. And Elias just cuts him off and says, who let this child into the arena? Like, which parent let their child escape and let them get onto the ramp and walk down to the ring? This is a dangerous environment.
And that was... Elias's delivery of that line was perfect.
It's
it was
so
really
funny.
Funny. And then Leo brings out Bobby Lashley... And it turns into Elias versus Bobby Lashley because you got to build that Elias and Kevin Owens versus Bobby Lashley and John Cena match at Super Showdown.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course that's
who's what... winning that one? Who do you reckon?
I mean, yeah. Do we want to do a prediction show for Super Showdown?
Oh, we will. I'm not making the Royal Rumble mistake
again. Yeah.
We're coming in.
No,
We're coming
I know.
In on Saturday to record that review.
Yeah. We're going to watch it live.
Yes, well, it's one of those rare ones we can do. Yeah. 9 a.m. for us on Saturday morning, we'll be in. And, yeah, Elias and Bobby have a brief match, but then Kevin Owens comes out to chase Rush, who was on commentary, and Rush was excellent here.
Yeah.
Just kind of running away from Owens, and Elias runs towards him, cutting him off on the other side. Does this amazing Spider-Man leapfrog over him.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was great. And then got into the apron, did like a big flip and stuff like that. I thought this was really good. This is almost one of those things where you on paper, you're like, our main aim of this is to get Leo Rush over. And I thought they did that perfectly.
Yeah, so the relationship they seemed to be setting up last week was Rush is almost a comedy,
smug guy.
He's
like Don King.
Yeah, but Bobby Lashley didn't really care about him. And we were like, well, that dynamic... doesn't have much mileage because the money here would be them both working together and becoming actually quite good friends and Leo being useful to Bobby, Bobby being useful to Leo. And that now seems to be the way they're going, which is much better than what they seemed to be building to last week. So this is good. The only downside, sorry, Grouchy Ollie is coming out again.
Here he is.
Is that it's just several weeks after having the most intriguing storyline in WWE. Owens is nothing more than mid-card filler. He is behind Elias in terms of mid-card heel. It's just... What the hell?
Yeah, it wasn't great for poor old Kevin Owens, but I'm going to look on the positive side of things. I liked this segment.
Yes.
And I liked Leo, like, he went to hoist him up on his shoulders and Leo fell backwards. And then DDP, core strength, just hoisting himself up with the help of Bobby. Oh, this is great. I really like this partnership.
I do too.
And I hope we can get more of Leo Rush on commentary. Mm. The manager of the hour.
And kind of wrestling. I mean, they could be a pretty decent tag team.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it almost seems to be setting up Leo and Bobby versus Kevin Owens and Elias, but we've got to make way for the biggest star in John Cena. Maybe Cena will make a run in next week, and that will retroactively set up that'll be the angle for the match they've already announced.
Don't be silly. Cena's not appearing on Raw. He's just flying in to do the
Super
Australia.
Show. And as soon as that finishes, he's back on a plane going home again.
Good, eh, mate? So next up, we got Ember Moon and a mystery tag partner versus Mickie James and Alicia Fox.
Yeah, the three. So Alicia, Mickie, and Alexa had a cell phone promo before this, and there was a. So Alexa says that that Mickie and Alicia are going to challenge Ember and a mystery partner. And Foxy says, I can't see how that's going to happen because no one wants to be friends with Ember.
We do.
We do. And also, have you not seen their Dungeons & Dragons video they did on Up, Up, Down, Down? She's got loads of friends. And but Mickie says that, she doesn't have friends like I do. And Alexa just looks at her and goes, yeah, you are lucky.
It was a good pro. I thought they all played off each other really well.
Yeah, it was nice.
These three. And
sort of Franken team again. But it's nice.
Yeah,
I'm amazed, I'll be honest, I'm amazed these aren't facing Ronda and the Bellas at Super Showdown.
Yeah, it is weird. So my Raw review was the old silhouette, who's that Pokemon thing.
Mm-hmm.
WWE star returns from injury. That was not my original title. It was huge WWE star returns.
Oh, yeah?
And I had it in there and I was like, wait a second, that could be misconstrued
on YouTube. I don't think so.
As like a body shaming thing, so I changed it to preempt any negative stuff. But it was Nia Jax who returned.
Yeah, in fact, I wrote Nia Jax down before she was announced.
Oh, did you? It caught me by surprise.
No, I figured it was going to be Jax. That's not me to be like, oh, look at me, I'm so smart, what a braggart.
Mm.
I was just like, I think it's time that Nia, and I think she was backstage at Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
So I was like, I figured that Nia's coming back here.
Oh, good call. Moon was worked over for the majority of the match.
Alexa sold Nia coming
yes,
out so well.
She did.
Yeah, sorry, I had to cut you off there.
And to build to the Nia hot tag, and Jax won.
Yeah. I mean, the highlight for me was, aside from Alexa selling Nia Jax, where it literally was like a slow turn as she heard the music, it was Corey Graves just making Mean Girls references and talking about Jingle Bell Rock. Yeah. I was like, this is great. More of this, please.
Bliss's facials are always excellent.
Yes.
And then this was awkward afterwards, though. WWE were like, well, Nia Jax just is fresh off her victory at the hashtag See Her Awards.
I believe that. I've written See Her Award as well.
Yeah. And they had like a little video clip thing to run. So it's like, oh, what a big surprise. I guess they would know backstage. I don't know. Just hate everything today. And the main event was Roman Reigns taking on Baron Corbin in... just like the ratings are gonna tank. Roman's over, but this main event was not just telling me you are now in the Reigns era, like the proper Reigns as the top guy Universal Championship era, but also NFL season has started. So historically, WWE just kind of give up for a few months.
Yeah. And they don't try quite as hard.
No, and they're like, okay, we're going to get bad ratings for a few months because of all the NFL games on Monday nights. So we're just going to take it easy and take a few 2.3 ratings for Raw. And that, Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin, that's the big thing you're building towards for the main event.
Building for the whole show. And it was much like the match with Braun. Not really much of a match until Smoke and Mirrors ran down. And then actually, I said to you when we came in, by the end of this match, I did actually get quite into it. Mm. And the crowd really were as well. I thought the crowd were actually quite hot for this match. Considering how much they were booing Roman at the start of the show, they were really behind him in this main event.
Okay.
And I thought Roman did a really good job of doing that. And he made his comeback. And... but I liked it as well because Roman was sort of setting up for the Superman punch, but every time he did, Corbin would just roll out the ring and the crowd would boo him rolling out the ring and they'd cheer Roman throwing him back into the ring. And then he had this wicked spot where he runs around the ring, jumps off the steps and gives him the Superman punch that way. And I was surprised because these two actually got me into this match and I had zero interest going in. But I thought they did a good job in turning it around. And then it got even better when Smoke and Mirrors happened.
I wasn't into the start of that. I did enjoy Corbin rolling out doing the Bully Ray, Randy Savage heel stuff of just stopping the match from properly getting going. But yeah, I just wasn't into the first 10 minutes of this match.
No, neither was I.
Which is when all this was happening. And then Roman like has enough. He comes around to spear Corbin, but Corbin has a chair, chucks it at Roman safely, and the referee was like, well, that's a DQ. And just like Baron did a few weeks ago with the Balor match, he restarts it and says, well, actually, now it's a no DQ match.
Yeah.
Still for the title. So Roman has that stacked against him. And then Braun Strowman runs down. That's stacked against him, but he fights him off. Then Macintosh runs down.
Well, he doesn't fight himself, he posted himself. Braun.
Oh, he moves out of the way.
Yeah.
Mac and Dolph come down, but then so do the Shield. Everyone's brawling. And actually, Roman hits a spear for the win.
Well, Corbin got a really good near fall out of
The deep six.
Off the deep six. Yeah. Like a really decent near fall. And I think the crowd even bought into it as like a potential title switch.
That was
I thought everyone did a really good job of getting this main event over that initially probably was not over. Mm. So all in all, I would give this a big thumbs up in terms of this segment. I thought it was a really fun main event and I had a blast watching it.
I'm glad. I'm happy for you.
Thanks, man.
I wasn't. Mine's like more of a like two thumbs in the middle, but one of the thumbs is kind of pointing down.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm doing that, I'm saying the word, meh.
Yeah.
That was my reaction.
That's
really
fair enough.
Well, and it said at the end, by the way, Mac Dolphman versus Shield at Super Showdown.
Yeah. Maybe we can get the sort of similar comments we did yesterday, which were either ones because, like, God, you guys are far too positive about this pay-per-view, or I wish you would go back to hating these shows.
Yes.
And stop being paid by WWE to like them.
People love it when people's opinions agree with their own.
Yeah.
That's the point that's the point of social media.
Yeah.
So, yes, I gave this a poor rating.
Which I think is really unfair. I mean, I'd have given it a high smack bang in the middle, leaning...
Average?
That's what I meant, yeah. Yep.
I'd give it a high meth of you.
Yeah, I go, you know, a 3.5 out of 5, maybe leaning towards the 4. Because there was more on this show that I liked than I didn't like, and the stuff that I liked, I really liked. So, but there was some of the stuff on there that I wasn't massively keen on. Thought Taker's promo was very rambly. I didn't particularly like the Ronda stuff. But I really liked the main event. I liked the Dean-Drew match. And there was some of the stuff on the show that I really enjoyed. And the Leo Rush-Bobby Lashley stuff. So, yeah, definitely thumbs in the middle, leaning more towards up.
Yeah, I like I said, I thought it was quite an uninspiring show.
So should we kick off with that Poetry Corner submission that we spoke about at the start?
Hit us up.
The next morning I awoke, calm, cool and collected. Maybe she was right. Maybe I did get worked. I had focused my anger on one tiny detail. And even if it was done intentionally, she was still right. It's wrestling. There's supposed to be heat. And cheap heat is often aimed at the disenfranchised. So does the fact it's directed at me make me more justified to cancel my subscription? Maybe. Maybe not. But the sad truth is, I'd been looking for a reason. Bad booking, copy-paste, pushing what doesn't work, over and over again, while almost punishing anything that does. Because it wasn't their idea, I just care if it did... I don't care if I did get worked, because I just don't care. Staying despite disappointment after disappointment has been my own wrestling insanity. I'm leaving it cancelled, and I'm taking my money elsewhere.
Ooh. So it's more of a prose poem.
Mm.
Or just like a not rhymy structure bit apart from the end.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, look at that! They've even recorded it. I could have played out the recorded version, which maybe I'll put at the end of the show.
So this is interesting. If this wasn't our job, would you be a subscriber to the network?
Yes, because I was subscribed to the network before I started working here. So. Yeah, I'd imagine I would do.
Why?
For all of the other content that's on there.
Totally. I would 100% be a network subscriber purely for the 5 takeovers a year.
Yep.
And...
NXT on a weekly basis.
Yeah, so I don't really watch that, but occasionally there'll be a match that everyone says check out.
Well, when I wasn't working here, I had more time to watch NXT, so I was watching it. Every Thursday, I would be excited to watch the next episode of NXT.
It's weird how working for a wrestling channel...
has made me have less time
to watch wrestling.
Yeah.
Or good wrestling, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And all the old content that's on there. Sometimes, like, my proper relaxation time. Pizza, classic pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Or ECW. Just ECW TV from, not from the mid-noughties, but from the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, just pop that on.
Well, absolutely.
One night stand. CM Punk versus... Just individual matches that you're like, you come in drunk... And you're like, I need to see John Cena versus CM Punk from Money in the Bank 2011.
Absolutely. I mean, there have been times... I mean, I've told this on the podcast before, but when I got the network, my first course of action was to essentially watch every WWE pay-per-view in order. Once one would end, I would just start on the next one. And I would essentially just work my way through. I mean, unfortunately, I was in a job where I was allowed to watch wrestling pay-per-views while I was working, so I got a lot watched while I was at work, and I could watch like four in a day. But it was, and I think from that, I've more or less got my money's worth from the network subscription, because I've watched a load of pay-per-views that I would have had to pay out the year for to buy on DVD. Mm. So I think there is some, there is value in there, and like the documentaries they do are also very good. Yeah, I don't, I unfortunately don't have time to watch any of the ones. I'd love to watch the Mick Foley one they've just done, the stand-up show, but I doubt I'll ever have time to watch that. But I would like to. And yeah. And I think that's worth it. But I do...
It's turned into a bit of an advert, this.
Well, no, but I do want to side with this person who's emailed in. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm being vague with my pronouns, pal, because you said you were trans, but I wasn't sure in which... Were you man to woman or woman to man?
This is fascinating.
To see me try and work it...
Yeah, around.
Well, absolutely, yes. Yeah. So I do very much apologise. I'm just as bad at this as WWE. Well, I'm not as bad because they're the worst. But, you know, I'm quite bad at this. So I very much apologise. So I don't want to do too much in that way. But I do agree that they stuck to their standards and their beliefs. And there are so many...
I thought the point was that they were offended, but that wasn't the actual cause.
And it was.
Actually
it was.
They moved past.
They
the
moved past it. Yes, but
it was just because WWE's a bit.
But
rubbish.
That was. That was the. It was the kick into gear.
It was the trigger.
Because there might have just been like, we see so many people saying like, I'm going to cancel my network subscription because that the finish to Hell in a Cell was bad, and no one ever does. Like no one ever cancels their subscription. It's always an empty, hollow threat. So it's actually quite nice to hear from someone who has stuck to their guns and has stuck to it. Would you like an Agony Arts request?
Yes.
So this one obviously comes from Anonymous.
They're all from them.
Yeah, well, Anonymous is very big.
Yeah
Anonymous very has. Very big in emailing us.
And a very troubled person. All the things that they get up to, need advice on.
Big fan of the show, and I know you guys are the top at Agony Aunting. So basically, my boss
Artsing.
Is... Aunting. Well, they've written Aunting.
Yeah, well, we're not aunts.
Okay. Well, so here we go. So basically, my boss is a great guy. We get on really well and everything is pretty much perfect. However, there is one thing that really upsets me. He's got this thing that I really want to call him out on because I'm pretty sure no one else has noticed. There's a thing he keeps pronouncing wrong and I'm pretty sure he might have done it accidentally at first, but now he's getting really grating. Do I tell him? I'm sure everyone else has noticed by now. I mean, how can you pronounce Ooh Wendy? Lots of love, Andy Datson.
Come on!
Andy messaged me on Discord.
So Anonymous, lots of love, Andy Datson.
Sorry, mate.
Ooh, Wendy. That one's just for you, dickwad.
He sent me a message on Discord to say, like, I'm going to send you an email for Agony Arts. And my instant thought was like, oh, no. Like, don't let us actually give you advice because we tend to give very bad advice.
So is it that everyone knows who Andy is? He is the chap. He's a WrestleTalk website editor and writer, mm-hmm. and he sort of mans the Twitter on Patreon.
He certainly does, yes.
Along with Liam. And yeah, he's a constant thorn in our side. he brought that up. Oh, we've already talked about that at MediaCon. Yeah. He was very upset that I don't go, Ooh, Wendy!
Which is what it actually is. Mm. We used to go, Ooh, Wendy!
Yeah. Do it my way.
Exactly. Your way is funnier.
Yeah.
I also teased that I was going to talk about the banging breakfast that I made. Absolutely amazing, mate. Hash browns, beans, smashed avocado on gluten-free bread, herby mushrooms, basil tomatoes, and some wonderful vegan sausages. It was absolutely incredible.
How do the beans work with the avocado?
You kind of keep those separate.
I don't think those mix.
But they don't. That's why you keep them separate. You keep them separate.
It does. Not even on the same dish.
No, it does, because you need like the variety of flavors on the page.
I feel like the avocado is your wetness to the dish.
How wet is your avocado?
Well, if you get it properly goopy and smashed.
Mm.
It kind of creates
Are there no wetness from beans?
Well, that exactly.
Like, oh, so you want double wetness.
No,
okay.
I don't want double wetness.
No.
I want beans or I want avocado. Not both.
No.
But it does sound like a fantastic breakfast.
It was. If you ever stay at our house, well, I'll rustle you up some. Yeah. Trying to see if I've got another email that I can do before we get out
Mate,
of here.
Nothing's going
to
top that breakfast story. Why don't you try?
Oh, this is an interesting
one. We can just talk about TNA. We, as a slight plug for either late this week or early next week, we will have our next Wrestle Ramble Extra podcast. And for a change, me and Luke are watching it through together to then talk about. And it's TNA Unbreakable 2005. and Luke is in his element.
This is like my era of TNA. Like, it was fun to watch it together, and it has been fun watching it together. But at the same time, I feel like we've lost some of the luster that might come from the podcast, where you go, "Can you explain this to me?" And I can like, "Oh, well, this was their storyline."
I still need a lot of this stuff explained,
because there, like, a storyline would come up that I would remember and I'd forgotten about, and I was like, "Oh my god, I remember this because this happened, then this happened, then this happened," but I could not remember the lad's name, so I missed a part of the match while I had to go through and research who that guy was. Mm. So I hope you've got good notes on that match, because I missed some of it.
Yeah, it's a strange pay-per-view. Just Austin Aries versus Roderick Strong in 2005 have a cracking match that holds up today. And then there is this tag team cluster F. Just all everything wrong that could be.
Yeah. Which one? Because there was two really bad tag matches on that show.
Yeah, well, the four-way.
Yeah, that was the bad one. The other match wasn't much better either.
There's a lot going on this show.
There's so much to talk about.
Some of it's really good.
Yeah.
And some of it is so bad. And some stuff I'd start out hating, but I'll be like, woohoo, this is great by the end.
Yeah.
And other stuff I'd start out going, this is really promising. And then it's, oh no, Jeff Hardy is in a bad way right now. He can't wrestle this match.
Yeah, God. There is a point when Jeff Hardy, like, he walks against the ropes. Like, he does not, he gets Irish whipped, but he has a slow, like, methodical walk against the ropes.
Hey, sometimes ketamine hits you when you least expect it. Completely unrelated thing. I just commenting on something completely unrelated.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just popped into my head.
But anyway, we're going to call it a close to this episode here. But obviously, I mean, you've got the outro music that's currently playing. But stick around after that outro music, because we're going to have that poem that I read nearly quite well and then sort of balls it up at the end. But the writer themselves is going to read it out for us. So you can hear that at the end of this show. So please do stick around and enjoy that. We're going to be at the Prince Charles Cinema on November 13th. So buy your tickets. Come and see us do a live Wrestle Ramble with a screening of Beyond the Mat. We're very, very excited to do that. There's going to be an advert for it starting up next week if I get time to make it. So you can look out for that. We'll be back tomorrow for the review of SmackDown. Have you seen what's announced for it?
No, but I like how you've just placed your leg on a chair.
Yes.
To have a kind of dad chat pose with me.
Well, there are three.
How's it going, son?
There are three things announced for the show. There is AJ Styles versus Andrade Cien Almas, Nakamura versus Rusev for the United States Championship,
Hey-o.
And The Miz is having Miz TV with a special mystery guest, which I'd imagine will be Marie. So we'll probably find out, because she was the one who scored the pinfall at Hell in a Cell. That's my prediction anyway. But that's all we've got time for. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
The next morning I awoke, calm, cool, and collected. Maybe she was right. Maybe I did get worked. I had focused my anger on one tiny detail. And even if it was done intentionally, she was still right. It's wrestling. There's supposed to be heat. And cheap heat has often aimed at the disenfranchised. So does the fact that it's directed at me make me any more justified to cancel my subscription? Maybe. Maybe not. The sad truth is I'd been looking for a reason. Bad booking, copy-paste, pushing what doesn't work over and over again, while almost punishing anything that does, because it wasn't their idea? I don't care if I did get work. Because I just don't care. Staying despite disappointment after disappointment has been my own wrestling insanity. I'm leaving it canceled, and I'm taking my money elsewhere.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.